I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday. And this hour of the program, our guest says racism is still alive, racial profiling is still alive, injustice is still alive, and we all have to make a difference. We have to change this. And she is traveling around the country working to change this. She is, our guest this hour, Sabrina Fulton, the mother of Trayvon Martin, and she's going to be in Milwaukee tomorrow as the keynote speaker at the 22nd Annual Soul Food Celebration. It's part of MATC's Black History Month celebration, sponsored by Milwaukee Area Technical College's Black Student Union. Her address is titled Empowering Our Youth. 2 years and a day after their son's death, she and her former husband visited the White House. They were in the audience as President Obama announced a new initiative, My Brother's Keeper. She's testified before a congressional committee. She founded the Trayvon Martin Foundation, and she has quite a speaking schedule all over the country. We'll be welcoming phone calls later in the hour for Sabrina Fulton. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. You can always leave messages for us on email, which is talk@WPR.org, and you can leave Facebook messages as well. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. During the course of the hour, we will tell you about how to get tickets, advance tickets. There's still a little time and a limited number of tickets at the door as well. Sabrina, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to Milwaukee.
Yes, our great pleasure. I've been reading a lot about you the last day or so, and one thing, because I can't quite imagine all you've been through, it's hard to imagine that when we watched the trial, when we heard of this news, it hits so many of us deeply in the soul. But at some point, you had to ask for the bitterness to leave so that you could carry on important work, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know, I tell people all the time that I'm just an average mom. And so, you know, it hurts. It just hurts a great deal to know that I'm going to miss out on so many things of my son's life. He was my youngest son. So it's so many things that I just feel like I'm going to miss out on. His first day of college, him graduating from high school, him going to the prom, getting married, have kids, and things like that. So I just feel like I'm just missing a part of his life that I didn't get a chance to experience. So it consumes my mind sometimes, but that's why it's so important that I focus on the foundation, because I know that I have to do other work. I can't just focus on that.
Mm-hmm. And you are doing so much work, Sabrina. You're all over the country, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just honored to have so many people that just want to listen to me and just want to hear me speak. I mean, I try to, you know, not to take notes up, because I like to speak to people from my heart, and I like to express myself what I'm thinking and not something that's written down and, you know, a speech. I don't want to do a speech, and that's something that I'm just against, just the speech part about everything. So I just want to, you know, talk to people from my heart. I like, you know, for people to ask questions and different things, and, you know, for me to just feel free to express myself. And, you know, it's just an unbelievable experience. I mean, if, you know, you had asked me before what, you know, how to deal with this, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. But, you know, by going through it and experiencing it and everything, it's given me a different perspective on things.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend a little more time talking about Trayvon Benjamin Martin. You talked about all the things that you'll never see. There were things that you did see, though, and I'd like for you to tell us about your youngest son, because during the trial and shortly after his death, there were concerted efforts, you have said, and others, to paint him in an entirely different picture as a thug.
Well, that to me is to try to justify his death, to try to justify the murder, to try to justify what happened. But even if he was a thug and he wasn't, I mean, that doesn't give anybody the right to pursue someone, to chase them, to shoot and kill them. It doesn't give you the right to do that just because somebody has on a hoodie or their skin color is a certain, you know, their skin color is a certain, is African-American. I mean, that doesn't give people the right to do those things. And we have to understand what happened. And we have to, you know, see it for what it is. You know, they wanted to paint him to be, you know, some bad kid that always got in trouble. And that's simply not the truth. Trayvon was a very affectionate. He was 17 years old at the same time. So when I think about, you know, him, I think about his smile. He liked to be around people. He liked to hang around his friends. He liked to go to the mall. He liked to dress nice and smell good. And, you know, he recently got into this name brand thing, so he wanted everything right. with these labels on it, with these name brands, and which are the most expensive clothing that you can possibly find. You know, I tell people he was an average teenager. He, you know, liked to listen to music. He liked to go skating. He liked to, you know, horseback riding, skiing, the whole outdoor things he loved, you know. But at the same time, he loved to go to the movies. You know, he, you know, we are a close-knit family, so he was around the family a lot. He used to babysit, you know, the kids in our family so that he could make extra money. He used to volunteer at the park so that he can help the kids that, you know, that were younger than him. He used to volunteer at the concession stand. You know, he was just an average kid. So, it you know, to paint him up to be, oh, he was this bad person and he did this and he did that. I mean, if we pull and open up the book to some of those people's lives who said all of the negative things about them, they have things that they did at 17 as well.
Right.
And so, you know, it doesn't justify what happened. The person who shot and killed my son was 28. Trayvon was 17. He thought as a 17-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
He had candy and a drink. He was on the telephone talking to a young lady in Miami. That tells you the mentality of him right there. He didn't have cigarettes in his pocket. He didn't have anything in his pocket that would make him older. But they want to make him older. They want him to make him, it was a man. No, it wasn't a man. It was a young man, but it wasn't a man.
He was a minor. He was 17 years old.
Absolutely. And he had just recently turned 17 3 weeks prior.
Yeah. Did you ever worry, Sabrina, about his safety before February 5th? February 26th of 2012?
I mean, I guess it was no more, I was no more in a panic than, I guess, the average mom. Because when he went places or whatever, I was concerned, and I have another son, and he's 23, and I'm still concerned about him. I always tell him, be safe, have a good time, but be safe. Enjoy yourself, but be safe, because it's a lot of nuts out there, you know. It's a lot of crazy people out there, and people like to do things to you for no reason. So I just want, you know, him to be mindful of that. I used to tell Trayvon to be mindful of that, you know. So, yes, to a certain level, but not to this extent. I would have never thought in a million years.
Yeah. You talk about at the trial that you assumed that George Zimmerman would have at least been sent to prison, that you were sickened by the outcome. You thought that all along, that indeed people would see what had happened here and he would be sent to jail?
Yes. I mean, I just had, I guess it's called blind faith in the justice system. I actually thought that these people would realize, I mean, if it was moms on that jury, and it was, that they would see and they would sit in my seat and they would, you know, wear my shoes and just think about if that had happened to their child, how they would feel. And I thought about that myself, that if I was a jury member, how would I feel about the situation and everything? And I know that they have this crazy law in Florida, the stand your ground law and everything. And that's one of the reasons why they said that they could not give a guilty verdict because of this stand your ground law. So people are using this stand your ground law, you know, in different states. I think it's in 24 different states. And it's not a good law. I mean, it's giving people the right to shoot and kill and ask questions later. It's giving people the right to, you know, not be held accountable for murder, not be held accountable for what they've done. And it's not a good law. It's not a good law for me and my family. It didn't work for us. you know, and I want people to just know that and be aware of this law.
Mm-hmm. I know that you have also been working with Jordan Davis's mother, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. She was actually, we did a rally on Monday of this week and in Tallahassee, and we rallied from the Civic Center to the Capitol. And, you know, we had Reverend Al and Pastor Jamal Bryan, and we had, you know, some local pastors and things and community leaders to come out and just support us. And it was very powerful for us. But we have to do more just to bring awareness.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep track of what George Zimmerman has been doing? Do you follow the news when he's been... A former wife and a girlfriend have called the police on gun-related charges, or do you just stay away from that because it's too painful to be reminded?
Well, I cannot say that I do follow it. Sometimes when I'm watching the news, it does come on, but I don't keep track of it because I'll lose focus on what I need to be focused on. Soon as I take my focus on what I need to focus on, then I start concentrating on other things, and I don't need that right now. I need to stay focused. So my focus is the foundation, building up the foundation, empowering our kids, changing this law. It's things that I'm focused on. So I don't concentrate so much on what he's doing. I try not to, you know, because it's important for me to stay focused.
Mm-hmm. We have spoken on several occasions with young people who were sitting in the Capitol in Florida trying to change Stand Your Ground laws. They're, for the most part, college-age young people. There aren't too many people over their 20s who are involved in this. I'm sure you've been following what they're doing. Is it making a difference at all? Are there serious considerations now of Stand Your Ground in the states that have this law?
Well, there's a lot of things that are being changed as far as the law. It's a lot of people are aware that the law is even there because prior to the Trayvon Martin case, a lot of people didn't even know about this law, myself included. I had no clue about the Stand Your Ground law, so I didn't even know what it was. So it's bringing more awareness. It's not just college-age students that's involved with it. It's a lot more people. We have a lot more supporters. We have a lot more lawmakers. We have a lot more people in the faith-based industry, community leaders, because this affects them as well. Because just because it's not happening in their particular city or their particular state, it still affects them because they have families in those states. They have friends in those states, and they want to make sure that if something happens, that, you know, if a child is killed, that the person doesn't get off. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, even in my case, and again in the Jordan Davis case, the same thing happened. The person that was shot and killed, he was not convicted on that charge. He was only convicted on the ones that lived. So that sends a terrible message to our youth.
I know that you've been speaking in Washington. You spoke before a congressional committee last fall about this whole issue. Did you feel as though your voice was heard? Do you feel as though you were asked good questions, or were you ignored?
Well, I can't say I was asked good questions or not because, I mean, I'm speaking as a mother. I'm speaking as an activist. I'm not an attorney. I'm not the person that's being elected in office. You know, so it's certain things that I can speak on and certain things I cannot. So I can only express myself based on, you know, what I'm speaking about. You know, when you're talking about children, it doesn't matter to me what color the child is. When something is unfair, it's unfair, you know, and that's what I want to get the point out. That's what I want people to understand, that this is not just an African-American issue. This is a United States issue. This is a community issue. This is something that's happening across the board, not just to African Americans, but also to other nationalities as well. So people just have to open up their eyes and wake up and not wait until it happens to them you know, meaning their family or their friends, you know, or their neighbors, for them to do something about it, and for them to really know what this law is all about and what is the problem with the law.
Mm-hmm. And yet you have said that racism is still alive, racial profiling is still alive, and certainly was a part of your son's death.
Absolutely. Originally, I thought, and I always tell people that I'll be the first one to admit that I always thought it was about the hoodie. And maybe the hoodie played a certain part in there, but I think it was basically about the color of my son's skin, because you have people that wear the hoodie, you know, in the daytime, in the nighttime, you know, in the airport, in the mall. I mean, I see hoodies all the time,
right,
like all races, all nationalities, all genders. I just see people just wearing a hoodie, and people don't see them as being suspicious. So why is it that when an African-American wears a hoodie, they're all of a sudden suspicious? So it makes me think that he was only suspicious because of the color of his skin, not necessarily the hoodie, because you have other nationalities and other races that are wearing the hoodie. And you don't have to take my word for it. When you're in the airport the next time, when you're in the grocery store, when you're in the mall, just watch and just take a look at who's wearing these hoodies. And it's all nationalities.
Right.
It's all races. It's all genders.
Yeah. Oh, I've bought many hoodies for my son, who is Caucasian. He wears a lot of hoodies. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wouldn't be looked at as suspicious. That was one of the things that, when I was on Anderson Cooper's show, that's something that he said. He said that, listen, I wear a hoodie to work like every day with a pair of jeans, and nobody ever thinks that I'm suspicious.
Yeah. So how do you take on, Sabrina, the issue of racial profiling and racism in America? I mean, some would like to believe that that issue is not with us anymore, but it's still a very large issue, and I wonder how you tackle it.
Well, one of the things I do is when I speak to different groups, I make sure that I bring awareness to what's happening. I don't want people to think that it's not happening just because it's not happening to them. You know, I'm a firm believer that you have to cross the line. You can't just say, well, this is happening to those people, this is not happening to these people. You have to have your eyes open. You have to realize that this is a possibility that it might be happening. You can't be close your eyes and close your mind that this is not occurring. When you have major influences in our lives and major people that are saying, listen, it happened to me as well. You had the president of the United States, our commander in chief, to say he has been racially profiled.
Mm-hmm.
You have Reverend Jesse Jackson. You have Bishop Jakes. You have Jamal Bryant. You have Reverend Sharpton. You have pastors at churches. You have police officers and attorneys. My own attorneys at Park and Crump out of Tallahassee, Florida, have been racially profiled. You see, so it doesn't cross and say, well, if you're making this amount of money, then they're not going to people are not going to profile you. That is absolutely not the truth. You are being racially profiled because the color of your skin, and that's just something we cannot remove. We cannot take off. People have to see us for who we are and can't judge us by the color of our skin. And we have to bring awareness to that. You can't judge a person just because their skin is dark.
Sabrina, the president, you mentioned him shortly after your son was killed in the Rose Garden, said, my main message to the parents, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. How did you take in those words?
I just felt like that his message was that if he absolutely had a son, that was the first thing he said. The second thing he said was when he talked about him being racially profiled. You know, so at first he said, okay, if I had a son, he would look just like Trayvon Martin, which means he would be an African-American. He would be an African-American, not necessarily, you know, his features would look like the president. Well, maybe not. Who knows?
Right.
I just think that he was saying that his son would have been an African-American, and that it's a possibility that his son would have been profiled.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, when I open up the conversation, it's not just about being racially profiled. You can be profiled in other ways based on your religion. I have a friend, her last name is Ali. I grew up with her. We've been friends for over 30 years, and I've never looked at her as a terrorist or a threat, but because her last name is Ali and she's of the Muslim faith, every time we go travel, they stop her at the airport. They give her a hard time, and it holds us up about 20 to 30 minutes based on her last name. She's being profiled. So I want people to understand that it's not just there. So based on your religion, you could be profiled. Based on the color of your skin, based on your gender, you know, based on your sexual orientation, people profile for so many different reasons. I mean, personally, I used to think the airline industry used to profile because you had to be a certain weight, a certain age, and you had to have a certain look to be a flight attendant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a form of profiling. Because you're saying that if I am overweight, then I cannot be a flight attendant. And if I was too old, I couldn't be a flight attendant. And that's a form of profiling.
What was it like to, I'm wondering what you think about the president's new initiative, My Brother's Keeper. I know you were in the audience when he announced that.
I think anything that is created or recreated or established to try to help our young African-American, Latinos, our little black and brown boys, anything that they can do to help them. Because right now they're missing the mark, and they're missing the mark because there's so many obstacles in their way. In addition to just the racially being profiled, it's just so many things that's in their way. And I think anything that can help them, anything that could benefit them, I'm in support of. Because I just actually think that sometimes they need that little nudge. They need that little push. And if a program such as My Brother's Keeper is going to give them the push that they need, I'm in support of that program.
Sabrina Fulton is our guest this hour. She is the mother of Trayvon Martin, and she's going to be speaking in Milwaukee tomorrow. She's the keynote speaker at the 22nd Annual Soul Food Celebration. It is part of Milwaukee Area Technical College's Black History Month, and it is sponsored by the Black Student Union. Her speech is titled Empowering Our Youth. You can get advanced tickets in the main building at MATC's downtown campus. Those of you in this area, it's at 700 West State Street. M322 is the room for you to go. Also, at the cashier offices at MATC's downtown Milwaukee, Mequon, Oak Creek, and West Dallas campuses, there are a limited number of tickets at the door, but you may not want to take that chance because it might be, we hope, a pretty full house. We're going to welcome phone calls for Sabrina, and here's how you can reach us. There are several ways, actually. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. You can always leave messages for us on Facebook, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that is at K. Dunn Show. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls. Sabrina Fulton is our guest, the mother of Trayvon Martin. She's going to be speaking tomorrow night in Milwaukee, keynote speaker at the annual Soul Food Celebration, and Empowering Our Youth is the title of her address. She has been speaking all over the country on so many different issues. She started a foundation, the Trayvon Martin Foundation, and is working to address many, many issues, including racism and racial profiling, injustice, and empowering our young people. We go to phone calls now. Ray is first caller in Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
Hi, and hi to Mrs. Fulton, and I want to say we're really sorry what happened to your son. It is outrageous. But I want to put a twist on this Stand Your Ground law. I think we do need a version of that. We don't have it here in Wisconsin. And just recently, a neighbor of mine pushed me on the street, and when I came back to ask him, you know, what's your problem? Why are you pushing me? He pulled out a hammer and threatened me with a hammer. Now, I called the police here in Milwaukee, and they say, since we do not have a stand your ground law in Milwaukee, that what I had to do was run away from this person. Now, every time I leave my house, I got to wonder, is this guy still out there with the hammer? Now, let me put this through to what happened to your son, Mrs. Fulton. Your son, when he saw this creepy dude following him around, he stood his ground. He didn't run because he knew, you know, when you grow up in a bad neighborhood, you know, if you deal with a bad person today and you don't fight with them, you're going to have to deal with them tomorrow and the next day. So your son actually stood his ground, and he had the right to. And when this character, I forget his name now,
George Zimmerman.
When Mr. Zimmerman was told by the police on the telephone, they said, are you following this person? He said, yes, I am. The police said to him, stop. Right there, he disobeyed police orders. So he was actually stalking your son. And your son fought back like any man has a right to do, and he was then murdered.
Sabrina.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, do you want to respond to that? Is there a place ever for stand your ground?
I don't. We have self-defense laws, and I believe that the self-defense laws were effective. I think the self-defense laws work. Like I said, I'm not an attorney, so I can't really give legal advice, but I don't see where the stand your ground law would be effective, because it is not, it's not working for everyone. It only works for a specific group of people, and you cannot have a law that the person is able to interpret what they think the law is. The guy that's following him, his neighbor that's following him with the hammer, I would just suggest that he continues to document. And every time something happens with this guy, for him to just document and continue to call the police. I mean, I just don't want anything to happen to him, and I hope nothing happens to him. But he has a right to protect himself, too. I'm not saying it's through the stand your ground, but he has a right to protect himself if somebody has a hammer, you know, at him. So that's just my comment on that. I just don't think it's a place for stand your ground, because it didn't work in my case.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Muhammad in Milwaukee. Hi, Muhammad.
Hello, Kathleen. Hello, the lady. What's her name?
Sabrina Fulton.
Yes. Actually, I give you my moral support for the loss of your son. And I feel very, very sad, because that's happening many times. And it seems to me sometimes I ask myself, maybe the Afro-Americans or Latino kids or Muslim kids or poor whites or women, their lives, it seems to me, it's very, very cheap. So they've been killed many times, and there's no stop to that. And I give you the support of my community, Muslim community, all over the United States, because we feel with you. And not only with you, with all those poor souls who get killed without something done to their lives. Like, as I said, blacks, Latinos, poor whites, Muslims, and others.
Thank you. I appreciate your call.
Thanks, Muhammad. What is it we need to do, Sabrina? I mean, we're here for such a short go-around, aren't we? Life is, I mean, it's trite, but life is incredibly short. And to be good to each other, to understand each other, to be kind to each other would be obviously the way to go. What makes it so hard for us to do that? And how do we inculcate kindness among all at an early age? How do we do it?
Well, I think we have to go back to the basics, and we have to go back to respect. I have to respect you. I might not understand what your religion is. I might not understand what your sexual preference is. I might not understand, you know, your education level. But I still have to respect you as a human being. I have to respect you as a person. And we have to get back to that. before we even get to civil rights. There's a such thing as human rights, and you have to respect a person's human right. You can't feel like a person is less of an individual because of the color of their skin, and that person doesn't matter. Because just like anybody else's family matters, anybody else's children matter, our children matter as well. And I think a lot of times people overlook that, and they don't want to deal with the ugly issues. And we have to. We have to deal with the ugly issues. They have they're fighting battles right now in reference to gay rights. You know, and we may not understand them. We may not ever understand them, but out of respect, we have to respect them as individuals. We have to respect whatever choice they make. And if we get back to that, we get back to the basic respect level, I think we'll be a better country. We'll have better communities. We'll have better adults. We'll have better parents, and we'll have absolutely better children, because they will see the respect in us, and it will rub off on them, and they'll use their parent as an example.
Yeah. John is next in Rhinelander. Hi, John.
Hi, Sabrina. I guess you answered my question, what we can do about this. I've committed myself to trying to fight these laws that are like Stand Your Ground, that are spread by the American Legislative Exchange Council and the NRA. They're going forth state to state with the same wording, and they're bribing our legislators to put them forth. Any more you can say about what we should do to fight this?
Continue to bring awareness to it. Make sure people know what's going on, know about the law, familiar with the law. We need to make sure that we have, when our young teens turn 17 and they're about to turn 18, that they are registering to vote. Because that becomes important, because you want to elect people that's in there that are have issues that will affect you. So you want to make sure you're electing those officials that are have the same issues that you do, have the same values that you do, and the same morals that you do. And so that's why the election piece is so important. We have a lot of people that don't like to go to jury duty, and they do everything they can so that they don't have to go to jury duty. We need to make sure that we have good people that's in the jury pool, that's being selected for the juries and for the different cases, because we need more open-minded people that are aware of what's going on. So it's basically about awareness. It's about education. It's about the voting, and just people knowing what's going on. You know, you don't want to pretend like you're an ostrich and stick your head in the sand and say, well, it's not happening to me, so I don't know what's going on around me. You want to make sure that you know what's going on around you.
Thanks, John, for the call. Jesse in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Jesse.
Hello. How are you this afternoon?
Fine. How are you?
I just wanted to tell Mrs. Fulton that I'm very, very impressed with the passion and dignity that she's brought to this issue. It was totally unnecessary tragedy for Trayvon to die in that way, and she's done something. She's bringing something good to the table in terms of doing something that's going to affect a lot of people, and I just wanted to commend her on that. My wife and I have reared three sons; they're all adults now, and we can't imagine how we would feel in that, or what we would do in that situation. And we can only hope that we could be as courageous and dignified and passionate as Mrs. Fulton is about this issue.
Mm. Amen.
Thank you for your call. I just want to say it took time for Florida to get in this mess and other states to get in this mess, and it's going to take time. So I'm in it for the long haul. This is my life work now. I am committed to this. This is something that I'm going to do the rest of my life and hopefully pass it on through my foundation. But thank you for calling.
Thanks, Jesse. We haven't talked very much, Sabrina, about the foundation, the Trayvon Martin Foundation. What's the mission?
Well, what we do is we are under the umbrella of the Miami Foundation, because they are already established, and they kind of guide us through the different things. I mean, we actually have, like, different programs that we do, like mentoring programs. We have an event called in February around Trayvon's birthday. It's a peace walk and a peace talk. And what that is for young people to know that they have a right to walk in peace without being followed, chased, pursued, and shot and killed and murdered and everything, just to let them know they have a right to walk in peace. And then at the end of the peace walk, it's a peace talk. And we have police officers to come out. We have different community leaders to try to bridge the gap and to try to pull our young people in to let them know that they are important because they are our future. So that's just one of the events we do. We also do a sit-down dinner that we just had. We honor Jamie Foxx, Michael Eric Dyson, and also Michael Bazin. We honored those three men. The program was based on men and what they're doing for the community. So we do a lot of mentoring for the community. We reach out to a lot of families that are going through some of the same things that we've gone through. We try to give them words of encouragement. We try to help with funeral arrangements and funeral expenses, if there is a need. We try to just bring awareness to the Stand Your Ground, this awful issue of Stand Your Ground and profiling and things like that. We have a lot of work that I'm doing. In addition to just the speaking engagement, I'm doing a lot of things for the foundation to try to help build the foundation and to make it stronger.
Yeah.
But we have a website. You can visit, they can visit the website.
Yes.
TrayvonMartinFoundation.org.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Sabrina Fulton, the mother of Trayvon Martin, who will be in Milwaukee tomorrow night, will give you more information about her appearance as we carry on here, is our guest this hour. 800-486-8655 is our number. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Marta in Milwaukee, hi. Marta, are you there? Marta's not there. Gary in Duluth. Hi.
Afternoon. In conjunction with what Ms. Fulton was saying about respect, my sense of things is that this culture teaches people to be both passive or aggressive, but they don't teach people how to be assertive. There's no classes. I didn't even hear about assertiveness until I was in my final year of college back in the mid-80s.
And assertiveness, how does it relate to what we're talking about now, Gary?
Well, the basis for assertiveness is not only respect for other people, but respect for oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with passive or aggressive behavior, the passive person has too much respect for other people and not enough for themselves. The aggressive person has too much respect for themselves and not enough for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need is that balance between respect for oneself, respect for others. And I believe if we were to start teaching kids how to be assertive, I don't think we'd be where we are now.
All right. Thanks for your comments. Our number, 800-486-8655. We'll continue our conversation with Sabrina Fulton. She's going to be in Milwaukee tomorrow night, the keynote speaker at the 22nd Annual Soul Food Celebration. It is sponsored by Milwaukee Area Technical College's Black Student Union. It's part of their Black History Month celebration. You can get tickets at MATC's downtown campus or at the MATC Mequon, Oak Creek, or West Dallas campuses at the cashier's office. Limited number of tickets at the door. So that's that. More phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, as I'm thinking about poetry and have been reading and loving poetry, I'm wondering, Sabrina, what it is that gives you solace and what has been able to give you solace over the last very, very hard couple of years for you. Do you read poetry? Do you pray? Because you've dealt with such a horrendous tragedy, you must need something to feed your soul.
Absolutely. It's the prayer. I don't even think I would be in a sound mind and body if it had not been for God that was keeping me, that was supporting me, that was guiding me, and, just keeping me sane. I mean, you can go into a state of depression by having lost a child or loved one, and I think it's God, and I think I'm feeding off of other people that are actually giving me words of encouragement and really support me. So I just, you know, it's just the support that really has helped us over, you know, the next hurdle. And, yes, prior to this, I was, you know, a churchgoer. I was a believer in God and everything, and I still am. So it just has made my walk even stronger. I tell people all the time that is what saved me. That is only through God's grace and mercy that I am still here and in my right mind.
Mm. And able to get over what I'm sure must be very deep anger, too, to be able to move ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just my faith in God. And, you know, I know that a certain part of myself has to forgive and move on. And so that's what I'm still in the process of doing.
Marta in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Sabrina, I live in a mixed neighborhood, and I am pretty much the mix. I have two adopted African-American daughters, but one of the things that I noticed following President Obama's speech, I noticed that when I went out walking on the streets, I would definitely make eye contact with the young African-American boys that I would pass, and I would ask them, how are you doing? And they would, like, look shocked at me, but they would answer me, and they would tell me how they were doing. And most of them would say, I'm doing fine. How are you doing? And we would have this, like, moment with each other. And I have found that to be quite wonderful, and I think that it will proceed to be passed on, at least in my neighborhood. And I am thrilled with those results. And I think that there needs to be a lot more of that going on. And I just am thrilled with it. And speaking of poetry, I have written a piece dedicated to you for Trayvon and you. And it is titled, I Have No Sons, But If I Had a Son, I Would Stand for You, Trayvon. And I would love to get it to you. And I know that you value your privacy, and I have been unable to get your address or anything. But I would.
Well, let's see. Do you have a Facebook page? I know that was in existence where you could post things. Is that still around?
Yes, we still have a Facebook page. She can send it through the website, or she can go on the website and get the mailing address. So she can mail it to me. She can email it. She can send it to me via, you know, email. She can, if she wants to type it in and email it to me or send it as an attachment, she can certainly do that.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we? I don't want to give all that on the air, actually. So let's, Marta.
Well,
I'm sorry.
The website, I don't have an issue with. The website is TrayvonMartinFoundation.org.
Oh, fine. TrayvonMartinFoundation.org. Okay.
Yeah. And the address is there. And,
okay.
She can mail it, or she can email it, or, you know, however she wants to send it.
All right. Great.
But I thank you for your call. And, you know, I just want to say, yes, we need more programs like the president's program. And not all our young men are bad. You know, there are some good ones. There are some good kids. There are some bad kids, like any other nationality. So I just think if you reach out to them, they'll reach out to you. I mean, a lot of times people don't want to say anything to our young people, but, you know, it takes a village.
Yeah. Thank you, Marta. Hope you got the address, and it would be nice to send that along. Keith in Madison, hi.
Hi. I want to thank Mrs. Fulton for her courage and her dignity, like the last caller said. And I wasn't going to call in because most of the people who have called in before me already said what I was going to say, but there was one thing I think bears mentioning, and Mrs. Fulton made a very salient point earlier about a jury that exercises some common sense, and is educated. And we didn't have that with that jury. I mean, the very fact that they actually believed that it was Trayvon or it was George Zimmerman screaming in that recording is totally ridiculous. The person holding the gun is not the one who's going to be screaming in fear for his life. And that jury did not exercise any common sense. And it's really bothers me today. And I can't believe how many people still believe that. It's just maddening.
Well, I feel the same way. I just, you know, a lot of times, and I'm going to say this again, but a lot of times people just look at the color of one's skin and they really don't think about, you know, what is happening. And you're absolutely right. If you're holding a gun, you're not going to be the one that's doing the screaming. And then, you know, during the trial, we had all of those people on Zimmerman's side saying, oh, he was doing the screaming. You absolutely would not be doing the screaming if you were holding the gun. That just goes beyond any means of common sense. So, go ahead. We can go to the next one. But thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much, Keith, for the call. So have you noticed any, I know we talked about this a little bit, but have you noticed any change as you travel around the country, as you testify before Congress, as you meet with thousands and thousands of people all over, Sabrina, has anything changed?
Well, I think people's awareness has changed because prior to this, a lot of people, you know, didn't even believe that you know, we still have racial profiling. So I think by people coming out now, they're saying, listen, I was racially profiled, that is bringing some awareness to the issue. And whenever you have awareness to the issue, that creates change. That becomes your first step to change because now people's eyes are open. And so I certainly believe that's it. And then we have so many meetings that we've gone to through with elected officials, and we believe their change is going to come. I just don't personally believe it's going to be overnight because, like I said, it took Florida years to get into this mess. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not moving out of Florida. You know, I may travel around, but I'm not going to leave Florida. I'm going to stay right in Florida, and I'm going to fight, you know, for the rights that I think that are important and the issues that I think are important. So I'm in it for the long haul, and I tell people, you know, that all the time. I mean, it's a bad law. It's not something that's going to benefit people.
Hmm. Well, I can hear in your voice from this hour that you are in it for the long haul, and more power to you. Thank you so much for being with us. We look forward to seeing you in Milwaukee. It's going to be a little warmer tomorrow. You'll be happy to know that. It's been very, very cold. But tomorrow will be a little warmer.
Well, I'll look like the cold one because I'll have my long coat on and my hat and my gloves and scarf. So I'll look like I'm from the Sunshine State. So I'm looking forward to coming. This will be my first time to Milwaukee. And, you know, I'm looking forward to coming. I'm looking forward to meeting, seeing different faces and meeting new people. So I'm looking forward to speaking with the group and celebrating their soulful celebration.
Yeah, thank you, Sabrina, so much. Our guest this hour, yeah, you're welcome. Our pleasure. Sabrina Fulton, mother of Trayvon Martin. She will be in Milwaukee tomorrow, March 14, 22nd Annual Soul Food Celebration. It's sponsored by Milwaukee Area Technical College's Black Student Union and the Office of Student Life. Empowering Our Youth is the title of her address. And the reception begins at 5:30. Program dinner starts at 6:30. It's at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. The tickets will benefit MATC's Black Student Union. And there are tickets available in advance at MATC's downtown campus, 700 West State Street, cashier offices at MATC's downtown Milwaukee, Mequon, Oak Creek, and West Allis campuses. And there will be a limited number of tickets available at the door. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks for listening and for your interest and for calling.